part of a genocidal war by Israel against Palestinians. Americans don't want this to be their legacy. They don't want this to be their policy. And they're saying, well, we'll vote for somebody else. We don't care who's president, because there's not much difference between Kamala Harris and Biden and Trump and anybody else. They've been killing Palestinians and Arabs since the Zionist movement started 100 years ago, which aimed to get the Palestinians out of Palestine and replace them with a Jewish state, which has happened. They have a Jewish state. They want to keep expanding, it seems. And this is not going to work. This is a recipe for catastrophe. So the American sending more arms is what America does in its foreign policy as its primary means of...
We have 5 seconds, Rami.
Yeah, so American militarism and Israeli barbarism are only going to create a catastrophe for everybody. And now the Gaza may influence...
We're going to have to leave it there. Rami Khoury, journalist, thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
And today, Monday, October 14th, here at KBOO, we celebrate and recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. And now, we will share with you a poem by Joy Harjo. Remember the sky that you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon. Know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away to night. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. Remember the earth whose kin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, we are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them, listen to them. They are alive poems. Remember the wind, remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember, you are all people and all people are you. Remember, you are this universe. And this universe is you. Remember, all is in motion, is growing, is you. Remember, language comes from this. Remember the dance language that life is. Remember. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio, Portland, as we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. And next, in observance, recognition, and celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day, we will air for you a casual panel recorded here in Studio One, KBOO, on September 24th, hosted by our own longtime KBOO volunteer Carmen Garnica. This panel features Hannah Shooting-Bear, Abuela Felicita, Abuelo Grandpa Mazatzin, John Sanchez, Paula Pena, Kimberly Stewart, and Balam Gomez. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. My name is Carmen Garnica. Today we have a special program to honor Indigenous Peoples Day, and we're going to start by reading the land acknowledgement. And here at KBOO, we celebrate Native American heritage as we honor the Indigenous people in whose traditional and ancestral lands we live on. Here we find the Multnomah, Klamath, Clackamas, Wutlala, and Chinook tribes. Also the Tualatin and Kalapuya tribes, and many other among us. Like this great river known as Willamette and Columbia, there are many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and has provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to recognize the ancestors of this land and acknowledge that we are here because of their sacrifices they made. As we remember these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their lineages, forming relationships between us and with the living world. So we begin our special edition with some guests who we are going to introduce.
Unos invitados a quienes vamos a presentar. Voy a iniciar con el
I'm going to start with our teacher Matsatsin, who is joining us at a distance in California. And I will also continue with another guest who is in Mexico City. I'm going to pass the microphone to them so they can introduce themselves. Go ahead, teacher Matsatsin. Good morning. My name is, they call me Matsatsin. Good morning, brothers and sisters. My traditional Mexican Mexica name is Matsatsin, sacred deer. And the original Anishinaabe name that has been given to me is Kishina Unubi, which means the guardian of the wind. Greetings to all. I am very grateful to be here with you on this day, especially for the reason of celebrating Native people. I am speaking to you from your home. I am in the Bay Area of San Francisco, California, and I have the great honor to participate with you brothers from the North. What are the International Days or Indigenous Peoples Day? We are told that international days are an opportunity for the general public to talk about the big issues that matter to us, such as human rights, sustainable development, health, and a time to draw the attention of the media and governments to the unresolved problems that need to be addressed, and we need to work together to solve them. So I would like to share a little bit of what has been Native Peoples or Indigenous Peoples Day. Indigenous peoples constitute almost 6% of the world's population, but represent 15% of the poorest communities. In other words, we are less but the poorest in the world, even in the most developed countries like here in the United States. And now all over the world in countries, especially in Europe and the United States, they are having a big problem because they do not know how to deal with the original peoples who are now nearing where all the wealth that has been there for more than 500 years, people from advanced countries have taken. So as we see the same here and right now in the United States, all the struggle and all the war against migrants and immigrants, that once they cross the border, they are no longer a Mapuche, Aymara, they are no longer Quiches, Mexicas, they just call them all illegal. So it is a very special day to be able to sow a little bit, as we can all help. As they say, put a little bit in that little basket that becomes the time of our life is short, and we have to occupy ourselves with trying to improve for those to come after us. In this case, our children, our grandchildren, but also what we want for our children, we have to want for all the children of all of our communities, right? So my first passion is human rights, but my second passion are the Aztec calendars, the ancient calendars, and also the responsibility that we, the native peoples, have to try to repatriate all that knowledge of our native peoples that have been taken without their consent to different parts of the world. So my particular mission is the repatriation of what we call the Borgia Codex, which is found in the Vatican. It is a combination of thousands of years by thousands of people of this hemisphere to learn to live in harmony with what surrounds them and with those who surround them. So the repatriation of the Codex is a very important issue. The responsibility that I carry as ambassador of the Kingdom of Atu'i of Polynesia, of the Kingdom of Hawaii, and the ambassador of the Federation of Aboriginal Nations of the Americans from Mexico to Central America, and also added for the repatriation of antiques and artifacts. So that is what we are trying to share on this day as we are celebrating the indigenous peoples. And we are not only going to celebrate, but also continue the effort for the repatriation of ancient knowledge. Now I would like to introduce my brother, who is a member of the Ambassador of the International Council of First Nations, Balam Gomez, who is currently in Mexico City attending the International Congress on Human Rights at UNAM, who is from the Maya Quiche people of Guatemala. Welcome, Balam.
Bienvenido, Balam.
Welcome, Balam. Hola, hola. Greetings from the Mayan people of Guatemala. It is a great pleasure to be able to greet you through this media. Please forgive the interference, but I am just arriving at the airport of Mexico City. I am from the Mayan Quiche people of Guatemala. My name is Balam Quiche, which means in Mayan Quiche, tiger of the sunrise. My name has an origin, which was born in the Congress of the Guatemalan Republic when my tata was a deputy constituent in the state of Guatemala. And from there, it was ingrained in my veins, the defense and the struggle in favor of our native people, the Mayan peoples, the marginalized people of the state of Guatemala. And we have taken those voices to the United Nations. It is a pleasure to be able to share with you. I also want to tell you that I consider myself a defender of the indigenous people's rights. I am a lawyer, I am a notary by profession, and I am also a member of the International Council of First Nations of the World, which we founded a few years ago in the heart of the United Nations, which has heard their voices in favor of the people of the world. We greet all the brothers and sisters of the different nations of the world, of the indigenous peoples, and we are also present here to contribute our grain of salt to this important interview, which is being done today through this means of communication. I am at your service, a big hug, and we will discuss any topic that may be presented at this time. Thank you very much, and thank you also to those who have made this transmission possible. Thank you very much, Balam. And we give this time to Hannah Schubert.
Hello, my name is Hannah Schoeninger. I'm from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I'm also one of the co-founders of Indigenous Now for the Indigenous Peoples Day.
And we continue with our next guest.
Hello, my name is Kimberly, and I am the MMIW rep for Oregon, and I'm also the founder of the MMIW Search and Hope Alliance here in Oregon.
Our next guest.
Yate. Hola. Hello, everybody. My name is Paulita Peña Urenda. I am the co-chair for SEIU 503 Indigenous Peoples Caucus, and I am the first elected co-chair for the SEIU International Indigenous Peoples Caucus. We are a labor union, and I just retired from being one of the only female farm labor contractors in the state of Oregon who fights for our Indigenous and migrant workers' rights, and making sure that when I would bargain and negotiate with farmers and canneries to make sure that they got a better pay, because that's hard work. And I hold many, many leadership positions within SEIU union. So I'm Lipan Apache and a first-generation Mexican-American. Thank you.
I'm John Sanchez, a community activist in Portland, Oregon, since about 1973.
Gracias. Y bueno, pues, como thank you. And well, as we had mentioned at the beginning, today we are honoring the Indigenous people. That is why we are here. And one of the questions that was sent to us is, what is the most difficult thing or the main barriers that Indigenous people face with colonization?
One of the questions that was asked for us today is, what is one of the biggest difficulties that Indigenous nations face today?
A lack of education. There is such a lack of education on and off reservation. The Indigenous community is left in the dark for a lot of it.
A lot of it has to also deal with the violations of international laws for our relatives north and south of the border, and the violations of those sovereign treaties that we have. For example, with my tribe, Lipan Apache, the U.S. Mexican border is a violation, and it's also a violation of our rights.
John?
Well, the way I look at it is, like, a year does not go by without this government starting something with us. If it's not, you know, trespassing over our land and trying to put a pipeline through it, it's trying to mine for uranium, or everybody that's driving these battery-operated cars, they don't understand that lithium is coming from somewhere, and it's coming from Indian land, and it's causing a lot of people to be hurt, because as Indigenous people, our land is sacred. I know the non-Indigenous people, or, you know, majority of them don't know what goes on outside their backyard, you know, but we know, and what is going on, and we're going to keep on fighting those problems, and till the day that our last children leave this earth, we'll be fighting.
Hannah?
What was the question again?
What are the biggest barriers and challenges from colonization?
Genocide and colonization to this present day, it has not changed since 1492. It's gotten worse. Our children, our grandchildren are affected. Our Mother Earth is affected. I speak to a lot of people regarding this situation because, again, one of the main things I look at is our clean air, clean lands, clean water. We nowadays have to face face masks when there's a pandemic going around. The continuous trashing and destroying Mother Earth is causing climate changes to where our future generations may not be able to breathe the clean air that we have, swim in the clean water, stand on clean land because of all the destruction that the colonizers have brought to us, and also our own people as well, due to the uneducation of how our lands are supposed to be kept. We are stewards of the lands. We should keep these lands clean. And one of these things that we, as Native and Indigenous people, need to continue to educate our younger generation, because at this point in time, they don't not know what's going on. Thank you.
Kimberly. I want to kind of add something on the tail end of this whole thing also, is that another huge part in the Indigenous community is addiction. Addiction is huge, and it is at about a 45% higher rate than any other minority group with alcohol and drugs. And of course, a lot of that is due to lack of education also.
Paula.
Give me a moment. The reality is that borders erase our indigenous identities.
Erase our indigenous identity. And we have very little access to our root. Reconnecting indigenous person, so reconnecting.
I am reconnecting with my roots, with my Apache tribe.
I'm reconnecting with my Apache tribe because, one, just a little background on that. My biological grandmother was sold for a pint of beer because she got pregnant, and she's Mexican, but my mom's biological father is Apache, so. In the 1950s in Texas, and it's a big no-no, because if you know anything about the caste system in Mexico, the more native you look, the lower one is on the social economic status. And so there's that detribalization that happened. And so reconnecting for me is learning my roots and using whatever education I have to help do that advocacy. I don't know my language. I don't know my traditions. I'm learning at 48 years old. So so as I was saying, we have a lot of erasure happening at the borders. When it comes to when folks are migrating over, and there's First Nation tribes who Justin Trudeau said that they could no longer cross over if they're considered U.S. citizens, even though their reserve is in Canada. And we have the same thing happening with some Apaches and Comanches on the southern border. You have the border going straight across, and if you're in the United States, you're federally recognized, but if you're in Mexico, we're not federally recognized because we're considered Mexican national citizens instead of being part of our national tribe, which my tribe is only state recognized, but so we're having those conflicts and that erasure.
I'm going to pass the microphone to Balam. What do you think about this?
¿Se encuentra ahí todavía?
Are you still there?
Balam, Balam.
Balam? Balam?
Bueno, le damos un...
Hola, hola. Hola, hola. Sí, se me
hello,
va.
Hello. I keep losing signal because I'm in the subway.
Sí, sí.
What is the question?
La pregunta.
¿Podría platicarnos un poquito...
Could you tell us a little bit about how the indigenous communities are struggling with colonization, or what the challenges are?
The indigenous peoples around the world, we consider that they suffer from many forms of marginalization, and it is one of the most important challenges that we are addressing at the level of organizations in order to overcome those obstacles that have led our peoples to continue to be marginalized in the 21st century by colonization, by means of culture, and a lot of the other situations that have gradually been lost from our communities themselves within the original peoples. And that is also a constant struggle that we have with the organizations currently, because we must lead in such discriminatory situations in all areas in the life of indigenous peoples. From the field of education, from the field of health, and even from the territories that currently continue to be invaded, and through colonization situations, many of these lands continue to be lost. And one of the issues of concern that we are currently advocating for is the issue of mining, and how our indigenous people continue to be subjected to acts of cruelty by transnational interests that continue to affect them. Within our organization, we have given much emphasis to the defense of the territory of indigenous peoples. Thank you very much, Balam. Teacher Matsatsin, would you like to add something? Surely, yes. I think the first of all, everything that has been said right now can be enumerated. The reasons why we have such a big problem. I'm going to add something that is the identity, is the cosmic identity of each person, of each being. Then I think because more than 500 years ago, they began to destroy and... The call got dropped, sorry. We're going to call him again. Don't leave us. What we all agreed in, one purpose, is about time, is the issue about the environment, it's the issue of the elements that give life in the whole continent, in the whole hemisphere, and also in all parts of the world. But when the invasion came here, in this side of the world, in our hemisphere, they took away our identity, not only our personal identity, but our identity as a human being, like many other beings, that we are children of the earth, that we are children of the sun, a very different relationship. And that is why I think that our most sacred book that they call the Borja Codex, the Huehuetlatoli Amochli, the sacred book, is in the Vatican. And it has not been released because it is a combination of thousands of years by thousands of people and thousands of kilometers that united this knowledge and this relationship with Mother Earth, nature. And that is why the book is locked up there. And that is why it is important that it be returned to Mexico, and among many other things that belong to the native peoples. And I'm going to say something else very quickly. Lately, our grandfather, our very special grandfather, who we call Leonard Peltier, who has been in prison for almost 50 years. He is sick, he is older, almost 80 years old or more. And we need him to be released. And there are many reasons that have been presented that he is not guilty of what he is accused of. But I think he represents the indigenous people's freedom movement. And that is why he is also locked up. In other words, they are using things that are special to us, and they have them out of our reach. I think that the liberation of Leonard Peltier, I consider it the same as the release and repatriation of our ancient book, So I feel that the problem we have is that there is not a strong union among the original peoples. Each one of us is fighting their own fight, and we have to unite. That is why we elected our International Council of the First Nations, where each group, each nationality, or each culture from any part of the world can participate in the rights that affect us all. So it is important to recognize the rights that we already have is the declaration of the original peoples of the indigenous peoples. Thank you, Teacher Matsatsin. Would you like to say something, Juan Sanchez?
Would you like to say something, Juan Sanchez?
What's it about?
The question was, what has been one of the biggest obstacles and difficulties regarding colonization?
To me, it's the destruction of our family units, of our men. They want to get jobs or be like, you know, everybody else in that way. When I was younger, the people that I would get a job from, they would give me a job if I cut my hair, and they told me that, if you cut your hair, you'll get a job, we'll give you a job. And so one time I got tired and I did cut my hair, and it just like almost transformed me into somebody that I was not. It just like took like a power away from me that I never knew before existed. Cutting my hair, it was like cutting my arms off. It left me vulnerable. And when I got to that point in my life where they no longer controlled my thoughts or controlled my actions, and I learned this from my elders. They said, even though you're poor, you still have your braids, you're still connected to the earth. And I believe that because I've been carrying my braids for 40 years, and I'm old now, and I still carry my braids, and they still give me the power to understand who I am. They've calmed me, they've made my mind calm, my heart calm, they've made my body healthy, and they made my spirit good by keeping my braids and keeping who I am and understanding who I am, because it's not about what I don't have, it's about what I have. And what I have is this way of life that is kind and compassionate and loving and generous. And we have to live this way no matter how hard it is for us as men, because we're living in a society that doesn't allow us to live this way. They don't want us to live this way, because if we live this way, that means our women and our children will be this way. And if they're this way, this is kind of hard for me, because I see a lot of suffering in our communities, a lot of men dying. You know, and they live in their guilt and they live in their trauma, and they can't seem to get out of it. And they pass that trauma on to our children. I was that way. And I realized passing the trauma on to my children only created generational trauma for the future. And I told myself that I was going to work to be the kindest, gentlest person that I can be. That being said, is that watching the colonization of our men wanting to have nice cars and nice trucks and big screen TVs. I got friends that's got TVs that go across their living room, and I don't understand that, but that's, if that makes them feel good, that's, you know, for them. But we have to change as men. We have to go back to that old way, and we have to start to live with our hearts and not our minds. We have to start living with our bodies and not our minds that they give us that way. We have to start living with our spirits again in order to be able to come out of this way. We are the spirits. That's what they taught us long time ago, that we are that. Our spirits run this whole earth. All the indigenous people, we all had one thing in common, is that we worshiped and prayed to the earth and to the trees and the skies and the waters, everything that was tangible. Everything that was hopeful, everything that came back in this life, we prayed to. We didn't need a throwaway car. We didn't need a throwaway plate. We didn't need all these things that they just throw away because everything was tangible and we had it. Colonization took this away from us and made everything so easy. You want to get up, this clock will help you get up. You want to pray, there's a church there, you can go pray. That's the only place you can pray, though, you know. They offered us all these things that made it easier on us, and all it did was tear our families up, our communities up. So it's really hard for me to, you know, talk about these things in public. I've had a hard time with it because the old people say when the spirits come in and they make you cry, you heal yourself. And what is it that you're crying about? If you're crying about you don't have enough money, you're not going to be healed. If you cry about that, you know, your children are growing up beautiful, you're going to be healed. It's going to heal your past. If you cry for your wife, your girlfriend, whatever's happening, you cry for their, for them to be healthy and kind and generous and loving, you're going to get well. And you cry for yourself to be that same way so that we don't spread that sickness on. All of us men, we have this issue, you know, that we want to be the boss. We have to be the boss. We have to do this. And that's not our traditional way. Our traditional way, the women were in control. They always, we couldn't do it. They, you know, one woman carried on 20 different tasks in a day. And all they asked is that you go out and hunt and get some food, bring it back, you know, and sit there and love your children. That's all they asked us to do, the simple things. And then we got away from that and we ended up going down a road that most of them will never come back from. And that's what colonization I see is doing to our Indian men. They find that pain and in the alcohol and drugs that they take. I see my brothers taking drugs and drinking alcohol, and all they do is cry more. All they do is get angry more. All they do is go to prison more. And there isn't anything that others can do about it. It's something that we have to do for ourselves as men. We have to come together as men, and we have to heal each other and show each other that it's okay to cry. It's okay to get well. It's okay to be able to wake up in the morning and have a smile on your face and laugh every day. Most of the brothers I know can't do that. And I make it a point to wake up, and even if I have to tell myself a joke to make myself laugh when I wake up in the morning, I do it. But I just wanted to, you know, get that across, because it's really hard for us men caught up in a colonization world that tells us, you know, treat your women this way, because real men treat their women this way. No, they don't. Real indigenous men treat their women with kindness and compassion and love. Real men treat their women and their children that way. I was not raised in that time when I understood those things until I got old. I still have all my children, they're still alive. And I work really hard to try to get them back into my family, try to love them again. But first I have to love myself. And that's what they tell us.
In one of Hannah's comments, she mentioned that the children or the new generations are no longer connected to the traditions and ceremonies. What do you think about that?
In one of the commentaries that Hannah made, she said that the youth are not connected anymore with ceremonies. What do you all think about that?
Kimberly, te gustaría.
It's too bad about staying on it. So, I think it's very true. In fact, it's not just the youth either, it's the adults too. And I have like a really interesting story in one of these days, we'll get into that, but not today. There's so much that I missed as a youth and being adopted, and I'm just now getting to really understand the ways Native ways, my ways. I wasn't raised like that. I missed so much. And the youth are missing so much because it's such a thing of beauty to be able to share it with other people. And once you get it, you have it, and nobody can ever take that away from you. And you have to really, youth don't want to hear us today. They don't have any interest in it. They'd rather scroll and watch TikTok, which, don't get me wrong, I definitely watch my share of TikTok. I'm guilty. But when it comes down to it, the youth have no foundation. And it's okay to have different beliefs, but still have a foundation and cultural roots. And that's what people don't always understand. My personal belief system may not be the same as Hannah's or Paula's, and that's okay. But the three of us, we still get along, and we have one very solid mission, and that is to bring the indigenous communities, more than one tribe, together to educate the youth and adults who are missing out on so much information and facts.
Paula. Como una mujer indígena que está reconectando, as an indigenous woman who's reconnecting, I see several folks with little connection to our common roots. Miro muchas de nuestra gente que no tienen esa conexión a nuestras raíces. And I think one of the main reasons for this is because of the different ways in which colonization and nationalism operates between each of the countries on Turtle Island. Pienso porque una de las razones es porque como I can't translate that, sorry.
I got you, but
approaches national identity. For example, I have shared several times, I've never been Mexican enough for Mexicans, I've never been Native enough for Natives, and I'm not American enough for Americans. Mm. And so I have to walk in three worlds. And so there's that huge lost identity. Mm. And for me to reconnect and going back, and because of the trauma, as John spoke about, I have a lot of things that I blocked out. And after my dad passed away, a lot of that trauma came back. Because I didn't have my daddy to help me anymore, right? Mm. And so, and I remember certain things that Mama Santitos would show me. So Mama Santitos is my adopted grandmother. She is my great aunt. She, when my mama was in the Oregon foster care system, Mama Santitos and Papa Chevo found out, and they were living in Texas, and because they didn't have their tribal card, so they lived in right off by the res, off the res. And she connected with representatives and senators here in Oregon before ICWA, before all that. My mom will be 68 in a few days. And they got help. So if we all know Oregon's history, in that time, brown people did not get their kids back. Uh-huh. And so Mama Santitos and Papa Chevo were able to get full custody of my mama and then legally adopt her. And Mama Santitos would teach me, saying, mijita, recuerda, aquí está la tierra, eres parte de la tierra. You know, baby girl, remember, here's the land, here's Mother Earth, you are part of her. You know, don't ever be ashamed. Mm-hmm. You know, and so Mama Santitos built that, and then my dad, may he rest in peace, mi papá que descanse en paz, would say he left the church. He didn't leave his faith. He left the church because he got tired of the priest grooming children. He caught a priest and a nun bumping uglies like bunnies on steroids. And then in Monterrey, Nuevo León, when he went under the catacombs in the cathedrals, what made him leave was the bones and the skeletal remains of children. And my daddy would say in Spanish, mijita, hay que saber la verdad, no importa la fe, porque tu mamá es india, es indígena, y tú también, pero también eres mexicana. You have to be proud of who you are. So my dad would always say, your mom's Native, but you're also Mexican, and you need to be proud of who you are, and you have to find your way. So
And what I've done with my five boys, tengo cinco hijos, ages 7 to 26. And sorry, ladies, two of my boys are already married. And as John was talking about, is teaching them how to treat their women. I've been married almost 30 years, and I love my husband, but there are times where we get those bad words going. And again, it's that how, because of colonization, how we deal with each other. We're trying to, like, keep up with the Joneses instead of being the Garcias or being the Peñas out here and say, no, we're part of el campo, we're part of the earth, where we need to keep close to Mother Earth and Creator. And so that's what I've worked with my boys. And even my little one, the youngest one, his name is Enoch, and he will go, he's 7 years old, and he'll go and tell his parent, his dad, Apa, that's not what Creator made you for. You have to remember to talk to Mom. She does a lot of things. She just wants you to love us and help us be real men. Grandpa's gone. There's no more Papa Chevo. You know, and Tito's always working. So he calls my cousin, my primo Jay, Bear, he calls him Tito. So he goes, and Tito's always working. And he goes, and your brothers are crazy. So all of my boys have told that to my husband. And so I'm trying to break those generational cycles of that trauma and everything else. So that's what I've been trying to do as a reconnecting an indigenous person, and trying to let them know that even though we have to live in three worlds and three nationalities, take all of that and embrace everything of who you are, because that's what Creator wants us to do. Mm-hmm. We are people of this, of the land, we are people of the water and everything else.
Gracias, Paula. John, ¿le gustaría decir algo?
Would you like to make a comment, John?
Yeah, I was listening to our sister here, and the colonization. We lived here in Portland at one time back in the 60s. And it wasn't too long ago, maybe 5 years ago, I found out that I had a sister here. And my mom had a baby in Salem a long time ago, and they told my mom that it was a boy and that it died, and they took the baby away from her. And for her whole life, she didn't know that she had a daughter that was alive. And then about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, might not have been that long, but our sister found us. And we got to be in her life for a short period of time, and she just recently died within this last year of diabetes. But it was the government and the churches that said, your child was a boy and it died, and that's the way it was. And my mom never knew anything about that. And I can't even imagine the mothers, you know, what they go through, and they see that because of their colonization, because of their beliefs, these beliefs of these people that can take your children and do whatever they want to with them because they think that you can't take care of them. But my mom had six children, and none of us are in prison. Thank you, Mom. You know, none of us are that way. And I believe that, you know, my mom and her spirit had something to do with that. My mom was a little tiny woman, and she lived in a city with five kids, and she fed five kids in the 60s, and you can't even imagine how hard that must have been for a woman to do that. But she did. And I'm proud to say that, you know, we're all doing okay. You know, we're touching on the colonization of these people. They don't understand what they do to Indian families when they destroy them and take them, their kids away, or they lie to them and their kids die and they don't say a word. I can't even imagine all the moms and dads that their kids never came home from boarding schools. Like, how do you explain that? You know, they were waiting and waiting and waiting for them to come home, and they never made it home. You know, and I can't even imagine that as a parent, like, where's my child? And then you live the rest of your life out and you die. And when you go to the spirit world, you find out that's where your child is. but that's the only way they found out. So that's colonization, you know, at one of its hardest ways. So I just wanted to say that. And it's very difficult for us to talk about this subject because there isn't anybody that's been affected.
I just kind of want to define what colonization is for people out there who don't truly understand that. And I think, like, the definition, sometimes people think colonization and you picture pilgrims stepping off the flower. Yeah, right. And me and Hannah were talking about that earlier. I think, though, that it's really important that the outside audience listening needs to understand what that is. Colonization, aka, could, I'm a great example. I've been adopted twice. I was raised by white people, and don't get me wrong, I got great parents, you know. Life was not easy for me growing up. I understand you gotta walk in three worlds. I'm never Native enough, I'm never Mexican enough, and I'm definitely not white enough. So they're just like, I'm good. But colonization is exactly that. They did not keep me in a Mexican family. They did not keep me in a Native family. And I think I was angry at that for a very long time because I did miss out on so many things. However, in my own personal belief system, I feel like God, my creator, you know, he placed me with the family I'm with to go through the struggles I had. But that is just a really great example of that. They wipe the culture out, so you become part of the system. So colonization, for those of you listening, is more of becoming a part of this system, a system that says, do what I say, not as I do. So, you know, they're gonna continue living how they want, but we have to follow their rules. And there's different parts of that system. There's systemic violence, systemic cultural violence, direct cultural violence. There's so many things that affect that, and that is the epitome of colonization.
You've been listening to our special Indigenous Peoples Day panel, hosted by longtime KBOO volunteer Carmen Garnica, recorded on September 24th in Studio One here at KBOO, and featuring Hannah Shooting Bear, Abuela Felicita, Abuelo Grandpa Mazatzin, John Sanchez, Paula Pena, Kimberly Smart, and Balan Gomez. This was only the first half of this conversation. Tune in tonight at 10 o'clock for the full panel, only on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And we wish you a very happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Thank you.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.